This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora everyone and welcome back to another episode of Equal Agenda. I'm your host Isabel.
And I'm Molly.
And today we have a very exciting guest in the studio with us. This is Anna. She is a consent researcher and educator. And today, the focus of our episode is going to be about gender-based and sexual violence, as well as touching on a few consent issues. So I'm just going to hand it over straight to her. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and the mahi that you do?
Hi, yeah, of course. So a little bit about myself. I'm from Tairawhiti, from Gisborne originally. It's where I grew up. Spent a good amount of my adult years in Otipoti, Dunedin, which has kind of become my second home. Yeah, and I guess a little bit about my work, and which also kind of is a little bit about me because it's something I'm really passionate about, is, yeah, gender equity, gender research, sex education. I studied cultural psychology, so I guess I'm a cultural psychology researcher. I've done a lot of research projects kind of trying to understand and explore the relationship between our culture and what happens in our outside world, to say, and what happens on our inside world. So that relationship between our attitudes, our beliefs, our ideas about our roles in society, the kinds of ways we define our emotions and our relationships, all of that inside stuff, how that is influenced by our outside stuff, so the cultural norms that exist in our outside world, and then how those two things actually feed into each other in an ongoing cycle. So how, yeah, your ideas and your behaviours shape cultural norms, and then how cultural norms shape our ideas and behaviours. And yeah, so I guess a little bit about my mahi is I became really interested in gender as a cultural construct. So how, especially here in Aotearoa, how we define masculinity and femininity and how that influences our inner worlds and either usually restricts our behavior to a very certain specific set of ways of being. And one of those ways that society expects people to behave is related to rape culture, normalizing and condoning sexual violence, stigmatizing, help seeking, promoting victim blaming. So that's one of the not so nice things about the way that gender norms influence our lives. And that's kind of where my passion has grown. I've started to do a lot of research in things like, I don't like using the word toxic masculinity, but for lack of a better word, understanding how restrictive or patriarchal masculinity influences this paradigm of rape culture, and how, you know, gender norms around being, feminine gender norms around being submissive and silent influence the lack of awareness and help seeking and support that people get for being in these situations of sexual violence. Yeah, so what I do now is what I spend my time doing is educating and raising awareness and opening up dialogue around these kinds of things and kind of getting everybody to plant good seeds, I guess, and challenge these norms.
What motivated you to work in this space, and is there any advice that you would give young women wanting to seek a similar path?
The first thing that motivated me was just curiosity. I was really started to become really kind of critically aware of the way that my identity and my humanness was being policed by social expectations. And like when we talk about gender, I'm talking about a set of values and expectations that society places on a person. I think it's really important to understand differences between masculinity and femininity. I'm not saying that gender's a bad thing and that we shouldn't have these differences. It's about allowing that spectrum to be available to everybody, every human, to, you know, as they're figuring out their identity, to be able to step into different versions of on that spectrum. I started to become aware of how I was quite limited in the way that I felt comfortable showing up and leaving my house, and also in the kinds of relationships I was expected to have, and this double standard of men and boys dominating and oppressing me and my girlfriends at the time. So yeah, started to study gender studies from a kind of anthropology, just curiosity point of view. And then once I started to realize how this was at its most extreme, and its most extreme form was ending up in, you know, explicit violence and sexual violence, and so many people, including myself, just feeling really silenced in that korero. Yeah, that's when I started moving into wanting to do this for a job and wanting to, you know, action things in that space to change. Because I really do believe that, you know, when I'm talking about this cycle of culture and self, yes, we are recipients of the cultural norms and of the way that the world works, but we're not passive recipients. We absolutely have it within our within us, and we have the power to radically change the direction that that cycle is going, you know. And also I was a bit pissed off, I guess, at the lack that at the lack of understanding that I had when I was younger. Mm-hmm. You know, I often think, like, I have conversations with young people now, with people from all ages, but especially when I'm talking to young people in their teenage years, I am like, oh man, I wish I had me now. Like, I wish I had this conversation when I was your age. So yeah, that's definitely a big driving force behind what motivates me. And my advice to girls or to anybody who want to work in this space, there's so many different ways to show up in this kaupapa. Like, you don't have to have studied psychology or studied gender studies, or, you know, you don't really need anything other than a fire in your heart for this kaupapa, which I think so many people have. And volunteering is a really great entry point. I mean, organizations give some really great training and facilitation training and disclosure training and education just about this kind of stuff to whoever is interested. Yeah, volunteering, studying, reading, there's lots of blogs and apps and people on Instagram, and yeah, there's lots of entry points.
I love what you said about, like, at the beginning about how it was you searching for your identity that then led to you exploring this whole new aspect of everything. Like, for me personally, because I went to an all-girls school in high school, and so I feel like I was in this, like, little, like, feminist bubble where everyone was like friendly to each other, and we didn't have to really, like, worry about kind of like that toxic masculinity. As you were saying, I know that term is like slightly maybe outdated or needs some work, but, you know, so I just think it's really cool how it all linked back to, like, you searching for yourself and then was able to span from there. I think that's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah. It's I'm really glad to hear that you went to an all-girls school where everyone was really nice.
Yeah. I know. It can go either one or two ways, I feel.
Yeah. It's been, like, a bit of a, like culture shock almost, like, because obviously I was very aware that gender equity is, like, not present, like, all the time in society and definitely needs work. Yeah, as I said, like, felt like a little bubble where girls were, like, really supportive to one another.
That's nice.
And so I just, yeah, I feel lucky that I got to experience that. And I feel like it's given me, like, a baseline as to where I'm like, this is what support from a group of women looks like. And this is what we should be kind of, like, searching for in wider society, relying on, like, our networks of other women to help us, like, you know, navigate everything that's difficult in life at the moment. So
I also think that's a really perfect example of how a healthy and safe environment can foster really expansive, safe connection and support and well-being. It's all within. You can't just individualize people to decontextualize people. You have to look at the bigger picture. And when you're looking at doing prevention or harm prevention interventions, it has to be a multi-pronged approach. I often talk about it being a whole school approach or a whole campus approach or a whole community approach. It has to be the teachers, the whānau, the people, and it has to be the men. You cannot be having this korero without men. And yeah, again, like you said, the toxic masculinity, I don't like using that word toxic because it sounds like such an attack. And the way I see toxic masculinity is actually a set of, yeah, I guess a set of values that are rooted in dominance and violence and aggression and isolation that have somehow manifested and just like sunken its teeth into the boys and the men of this world. And I'm not saying that men and boys should not be held accountable for their behavior. They absolutely should. And I'm also not saying that men and boys are equally oppressed by the patriarchy. Women definitely are heavily, heavily oppressed. It's deeply entrenched. But this whole toxic masculinity thing, these rigid gender norms, comes at a huge cost for boys and men as well.
Well, it's like there's no gender equality or equity without men.
Yeah.
You know, it's a two-part thing.
There's so much power in role modeling. Like, that's the thing that kills me. I'm like, I just wish I could rock up and into a room as a man and like have this korero, because I speak with boys all of the time and men about this stuff, and I'm like, oh, they are constantly talking about how the other men in their lives are policing their behavior and policing their conversations, and how they're not necessarily like, they're having these conversations but with women. And there's just, there's so much power in peer group norms and workplace norms and how other men show up for other men and what they normalize. Like, it's totally possible, and I see it all of the time. Really beautiful, healthy, masculine, you know, identities that are respectful and, you know, strong and zero tolerance for violence and, you know, have this like nurturing heart of love and are still extremely masculine. And when that's role modeled, I mean, it's like a domino effect. I think that's people's natural state, is to be in that form of love and connection, and that and all it takes is one person to just give permission to the rest.
It can even be as simple as just like changing who you follow on social media.
Mm-hmm.
The media you're consuming has so much more impact on us than I think a lot of people realize.
Yeah.
Or even, just like changing the conversations within your friend groups, or calling out other men or boys when you see something wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And it all starts like in childhood as well, doesn't it? Like, their foundations are so essential to who they are, and like their family influences too. So I find what you said so important about like the domino effect of like just having those good representations of like male presence in your life and being able to role model yourself off of them. So it's a shame that the past generations, there's only like so much change that they can make, but I feel like it's gradual, and I feel like there's definitely a lot of like positive change that's being made. So all hope is not lost.
No, I have complete hope. I'm very optimistic about the situation.
Do you think New Zealand society is evolving its understanding of sexual violence, gender inequality, and consent?
Yeah, I honestly do. I really do. I think it's a complicated question, because there's different layers to it. There's like, is it reflected in our policies and government all the time? No, I don't think so, especially now. Is it reflected in the way that people are showing up on the street and in the classrooms and on campuses? Yes, I do. I think that people are more, the conversations that are being had, the campaign posters that I'm seeing around, the ads that I'm seeing, it's becoming, like I said, more diverse. There's the general awareness is raising. I mean, I've been teaching consent education, or like consent workshops to young people for, years, like five or six years. And I've definitely noticed a difference in the level of knowledge that people are bringing into the room straight off the bat. Like, I can speak at a higher, or I'm able to speak on more advancedly. With them about concepts, which before, like when I first started, I had to like really, really bring it back to like the basic definitions of consent and stuff. But I mean, there's always resistance. So yeah, I think a lot of people are fighting the good fight, watering the good seed. yeah, like I said, I'm optimistic. I really am. I think I really have quite a like love for Gen Z. I think I'm seeing a lot of Gen Zers be super inspiring. It's it warms my heart. Actually kind of makes me quite emotional when I'm at workshops and I see like young people having these conversations and speaking up and seeking support and also calling in problematic behaviors and it's great.
I like what you said about the problematic behaviors, like just bringing awareness, like highlighting what is and what is not problematic behavior, like when it comes to consent, just like emphasizing how important it is, because I feel like I was taught consent, but actually like very quite delayed, maybe like year 13.
Oh, I know. Yeah, like we are Gen Z as well.
Yeah, we are.
And it's like I remember getting maybe like one sex ed class in like year 10 or something.
Just horrific. Yeah,
and then it was like a little bit in year 11, and then like year 12 and 13 I don't even think it was touched on because my the academic workload was so much.
The thing is, consent is really the bare minimum. Like that is not something we should be aiming for. That is the lowest, like, to really, for something to be consensual is, in my opinion, just, like, you're scraping the, like, line, you know, if you're just over the, like, what is consent? It's people are framing it as enthusiastic consent, and yes, enthusiastic consent is great as well, but what we really should be aiming for and teaching is the nuances and the humanness of diverse relationships and like respect and communication and fun and pleasure centered and respectful connection and a whole and community, not just a one on one or however many people are engaging in the sexual encounter. Like, you know, it's beyond that. It's the whole community thriving, you know, because we also have this area which I talk about in my workshops of like, I call it unsexy sex, where it's like, technically it's consensual. Like if we look at the legal definition of consent, technically it's consensual, you know, they're above a certain age, they're not intoxicated, they're not being lied to, whatever, they're not being pressured or coerced. Okay, we've got that. But just because those things aren't happening doesn't mean that the encounter or the relationship is not harmful, because we live in this world where people are watching like terrible demonstrations online through pornography or what, or songs and movies and pop culture. Yeah, they're watching, they're getting education from online sources. There's these rigid gender norms about men that are supposed to have these gigantic sexual appetites and women that are supposed to play hard to get and, you know, like say no, and then say yes. And it's like there's these crazy ideas around, and like that women are supposed to be submissive, and like heteronormativity, you're supposed to be having a very specific kind of sex. And so there's all of these things that exist, all of these pressures that exist in the world that, and in our society, that might lead somebody to give their consent but not actually want to be doing what they're doing, and nobody is there forcing them to do it, but we live in a world that pressure, the pressures like exist around them, not from the specific person. And it's the same for men as well, like, and well, not the same, but you know, there are men that feel the pressure to have like a whole bunch of sex and a whole bunch of heterosex or penetrative sex when that might not be what they want to be doing. So again, that's technically consensual, but it's not, we can do way better. Like we can do so much better than teaching consent. We can teach, like we need to aim way higher. And we are, like those kinds of conversations are being had, and that awareness is raising, which is, like I said, so exciting, and it just warms my heart and it makes me emotional.
I think that idea is cool about like just really making up your mind on what you want before you just jump into it. I feel like a lot of things these days, you're looking for that like instant gratification all the time. Like social media moves so fast. I feel like little kids are growing up so fast because of social media. So like, as you said, they have these like outside influences, the online influences, like from a really early age. And it's like horrible sometimes when you think about 15, 14, like even younger, who I feel like 15 is like, is that really old enough to be like being influenced by all of these like really harmful outside factors we've experienced it probably, but like only, I feel like it's only just starting to like ramp, well, not just starting to ramp up, but it's probably ramped up a lot since we've like grown up. But yeah, just really interesting to hear about that.
Mm.
And I think it's important that it's brought to the attention of young people, if any of them are listening, to be sure. Like, hello, you don't need to be doing those things just because your friends are doing them or you're seeing other people your age doing them.
Yeah.
Like, do it because you want to do it and because you want to, you know, like, you have the mental well-being, you're at peace with yourself, you're enthusiastic about it, you know, like, do it for the right reasons.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like there's a lot of pushback from Gen Z and younger, almost like going against those societal norms and just doing things on their own terms or when they feel ready.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that because it's just so refreshing, and what the younger generations need more of is just like whatever you see online or whatever your friends are talking about, like, you do not need to follow that if you do not feel that.
Yeah, I think that people just and what I wish I had when I was in school or just like early days uni is like this permission to be like audacious and to be and to commit to your wants. And like there was so many times where I was like, oh, I just don't really feel comfortable doing this or wearing this or acting like this or being in this kind of dynamic, and why are teachers saying that? I'm like, is that all good? Like, that's a bit of a double standard, or why are my friends like normalizing that? Like, that feels a bit weird. But nobody ever gave me permission to like be vocal and to commit to that gut feeling that I had. And that's something I really just want. And yeah, like you said, Gen Z is really kind of building that momentum of feeling bold enough to commit to those feelings and, you know, speak up and just be audacious. And again, it's that cultural cycle. It's like you actually have it's so empowering and exciting to realize the power that you have as a person in the world to change the narrative.
So I guess we've already kind of slightly touched on this, but what gives you hope about the next generation when it comes to gender equality and ending sexual violence?
I mean, a lot of my friends are actually becoming parents, which is crazy. Time goes so fast. But so, like, that's really cool to have, like, people who I just think are just so incredibly critically aware and deliberate and intentional about the way they show up in the world and the way that, like, to know that those are the kinds of, that they're going to be raising kids is so exciting. Yeah, the conversations that I'm having with, I mean, the people, I mean, I'm having conversations with, like faculty at on campuses, on uni campuses and in workplaces and in clubs, and then also like high school, different ages, and then other holiday programs and stuff. So I've got like, it's not just Gen Z, it's like a whole range of people and ages. And I always walk out inspired and optimistic, like every single time, even when there's people in there in the beginning that are like, have some misguided or problematic beliefs or opinions about things that they haven't had the opportunity to unpack. Yeah, I think what gives me hope is how willing people are to engage and have their minds, I guess, changed. I'm not here to like necessarily change everybody's minds and, you know, be like the feminist with a pitchfork, but just like opening the conversation. People lean in, you know, and there's like a certain openness in this, in the generations, the younger generations and my generation and older generation. There's an openness which is exciting and it's good.
I love the fact that like because of your line of work, the reason that you're doing it, like when it comes to consent and rape, and just it can be dark, can't it? It can be really horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think it's really cool to hear that you come away from your experiences like teaching and talking about this topic feeling optimistic, because it's good to hear that like you can take something that has these like heavy intonations and just build upon it and have these open conversations, always coming back to that like safe space. I think the safe space is really cool, like, and it's so relevant too, because like I've seen examples of that, like who you surround yourself with, who your community is, like that is so heavily influential as to like the political views that you form, like how you go about your daily life. So yeah, cool to see that you can put that like positive spin on it and bring it back to like a more,
it's a dark topic, and that's, and you know, I'm optimistic and I'm talking about my like hope in humanity, because people do show up in a way that gives me hope. But I'm not, there's like, by no means am I saying that it's not a mess out there, you know, like is like we have a lot of work to do, and it's, I'm optimistic and I'm hopeful, and I have this like deep faith in humanity, because people are, you know, when they're leaning in, when they're open, when they're having these conversations, when we're creating safe spaces, people do feel passionately, you know, about creating change and equity and gender equity. But yeah, I guess for the record, I appreciate you saying that, but I also, it's just made me think, like, for the record.
Not everything's perfect.
Yeah, we do need people. I'm hopeful and I'm optimistic that we can do the work. Yeah. There is work to be done.
Yeah.
I think it almost comes with any change-making career or any work that you're doing in the change-making space, is the reason you do it, or the greater purpose, I guess, is the vision that keeps you going. So it's like, even if there are hard times or it gets kind of dark, it's like the vision for a better future or a more equal future is always like keeping you going.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the light at the end of the tunnel, for sure.
Was there anything else that anyone would like to touch on that we didn't kind of get to cover?
I think it is really accessible to do the work, this work, and like, and to get involved in the kaupapa in whatever ways that you have capacity to. And so my advice, and I guess reminder, because I've already talked about this in the podcast, is just to like have these conversations and go out there and, you know, safely have these conversations and do the small and the bigger things and actions to learn and to connect. Like, it's so important to engage in this as a community and to connect together and to ask for help. Like, that's what a lot of my research is on, is just like asking for help and being a connected force. You know, you're not out here on your own. I've said this so many times. Yeah. I was going to say watering the conceit, because that's like an analogy that I use in the workshops. But yeah. That would be my final piece.
Just wanted to say a big, big thank you to Anna for joining us on this episode. It was quite a last-minute call-in, so we are very grateful that she was able to fit us into her schedule. And thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you in the next one.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.